Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Myers & Associates, serving the Midwest with industrial maintenance products and services. Call them at 515-795-3676. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running. Hey, this is Shane Vanderhart with Brian Myers. Welcome to another week of Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, did I understand that that your dad has had a little difficulty with his heart?
Yeah. He had a minor heart attack. I'm not sure. Just partial stoppage. I'm not entirely sure exactly what's the difference between a minor heart attack and a major heart attack.
Yeah, that doesn't.
Other than a major heart attack, he probably wouldn't be leaving the hospital today. Yeah, but
so he's getting out today.
That's what they think. Yeah.
Outstanding.
Yes.
Outstanding.
So
that's good.
So yeah, they went and did angioplasty, put some stents in, and there's actually three other arteries that there's some partial blockage, but not enough for them to do anything. So they got to keep an eye on it. But at least they know about it. So
yeah. Well, listen, I'm glad he's going to get out of the hospital today, Lord willing. I know Dan Vanderhart. Not well, but I know him, seems like a really good guy, and we would ask our listeners to keep Dan in their prayers.
Yeah, the cardiologist told my brother, I was traveling, so I wasn't actually able to be in the hospital, but he told my brother, Scott, and I'm a twin, and he said, if he's your father, you just need to watch out, because apparently we need to go get some calcium scoring done, Like, oh, beautiful. Thanks, Dad, for your inheritance. We appreciate that.
Well, the real scary thought is that you have a twin brother.
I know.
That is fearful.
I know. He's a saner version of me.
Well, I guess that's good.
Yeah. You know, he works for the state of Iowa, and he walks around the state capitol, and people ask if he's my brother. He says, yes, and I'm sorry.
The apology comes immediately. Okay, enough of all that. We have a special guest with us on our VIP line this morning. We have with us Dr. Roy Spencer, Principal Research Scientist at the University of Alabama in Huntsville. Prior to this position at the University of Alabama, he was a Senior Scientist for Climate Studies at NASA's Marshall Space Flight Center, and he is also still U.S. science team leader for the Advanced Microwave Scanning Radiometer, which is flying on NASA's AQUA satellite. Anyway, good morning, Dr. Spencer.
Morning, guys. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk with you.
Are you sure it's good?
He's excited.
Oh, I'm pretty sure.
pretty sure. We'll see at the end of the interview how this goes.
So. Yeah, what we did is I ended up confusing myself and or Roy on the time that we were going to conduct this interview. So
he's still
sipping on his coffee.
It wasn't Roy. It was all you, Brian.
It was all me. Okay. Roy, just last week we had I've seen several different numbers thrown around. Somewhere between 150 and 175 countries sign what has been referred to as the historic Paris Climate Accord. And my question to you, right out of the gate, is if they get everything that they want in this deal, what will the real effect be with respect to global temperature?
Okay, if all of the countries that have signed up to that accord follow through with what they said they were going to do, because they submitted to the United Nations, the individual countries did, what they planned to do in terms of carbon dioxide reductions. So if they all succeed in their plans, it will make no difference to global temperatures. And people have done studies of this, and it's basically because what they're committing to is basically business as usual as far as those countries go. I mean, some countries do propose cuts, but other ones just don't propose any cuts at all. And people have run the numbers and figured out that all of that all together across all the countries, say for the next 10 or 15 or 20 years, is going to have no measurable effect on global temperatures. So it's all posturing, it's all politics, you know, it's all optics. It's just to keep the whole process going, where government representatives get to go to meetings in faraway locations and eat really good meals and, you know, pretend that they're doing something for humanity. When
you fact, sound you know. Cynical.
Yeah, that would be me.
Well, let me ask you this. The deal sets a target of limiting global warming to well below 2 degrees Celsius or 3.5 degrees Fahrenheit by the year 2100. And first of all, is that even possible? If we did everything that we could possibly do, not just business as usual, but if we did everything we could possibly do, could they achieve that? Is that a goal that could be done?
We really don't know. There's two parts to this question. First of all, even if we continued business as usual, will we even have 2 degrees of warming by the end of the century? It's not clear that we will. It all depends on what you believe about how sensitive the climate system is to our carbon dioxide emissions. It could be we continue to have very slow warming over the long term, and we don't even get 2 degrees C of warming. The other side of it is, okay, even if we're going to see, say, 3 or 4 degrees C of warming, can we keep it below 2 degrees by cutting back on emissions? And I don't think we can, not without killing hundreds of millions of people at least due to energy poverty, or unless we find some sort of new energy technology, which we currently don't have, because right now, from where we sit with current energy technologies, there is no way to provide more than about 12 to 15% of humanity's energy requirements during this century with anything more than, well, let's put it this way. 12 to 15% is pretty much the limit on the renewable portion of our total energy requirements. In other words, it's going to take fossil fuels to provide at least 85% of humanity's needs through this century until we get some sort of new energy technology.
Oh, we could stick up more windmills in Iowa. That'll help.
Yeah, I know if windmills are popular in some locations. I don't know how. I guess it depends on who you are in Iowa, whether it's popular or not.
Yeah, they're kind of a blight in northern Iowa. You drive through and they're all over.
And that's what the Europeans are finding out, is that they're just a tremendous blight on this landscape, and they're very unpopular now. And the cost of electricity, for instance, in the UK has skyrocketed. And they've actually, you know, they've had tens of thousands of people dying because they can't afford their electricity in the winter.
Well, one of the things that a spokesperson, I guess it was the president of the Natural Resources Defense Council, said was that today, that being last week when the agreements were signed, today marks a beginning, a historic start. We're leaving the age of Jurassic fuels behind for good and moving to cleaner, smarter ways to power our future. And yet it sounds to me like the reality is that there's an awful lot of impoverished people that are going to suffer as a result of this policy.
That's right, yeah. And follow the money, because, you know, it takes a lot of subsidies in order to support whether it's wind or solar, because they're not competitive with other forms of energy, with traditional Jurassic forms of energy.
Right, right. Now, I understand.
I mean, I'm all for it. I'd love it if we came up with some sort of renewable energy technology that was cost competitive, even just a little bit more expensive than fossil fuels. It'd be awesome. It's just not there yet.
Right. One of the contentions that's made in this particular article, and this has been said hundreds of times in the news, excuse me, was that 2015 was the warmest year on record, and that 2016 is on pace to even be warmer. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, that's true, and it's because we had one of the strongest El Niños on record. So that's mainly just a temporary blip. you know, come 2017, we're going to have an average year probably because we're going into La Nina. And who knows? Maybe it'll even be below average in temperature. So those are just year-to-year natural climate fluctuations that cause that. What we should be talking about is the long-term warming trend, not these year-to-year changes.
Was there a disparity between the satellite data and the surface temperatures with respect to 2015 temperatures?
Oh, yes, there was. And the surface temperatures, which is what most people follow, it was 2015 was clearly the warmest on record. And in our satellite temperatures, I believe we were the third warmest on record. Now, because El Nino, a warm El Nino event, it bridges 2 years. El Nino warmth peaks around the December-January timeframe. So it ends up causing two back-to-back years to be warm. And typically in the satellite data, the second year is the warmest. So we may well have a record warm year even in the satellite data in 2016. It's still too early to tell. And what might get in the way of a record warm year is this La Nina that is forming in the Pacific right now is coming on faster and stronger than expected. So if that comes on, you know, strong and fast, then 2016 won't be a record warm year, and 2017 will definitely be a cool year.
But now, do I understand that a while back that the satellite data showed indeed some warming? And
oh yeah, that's what we should be talking about is the long term warming trends, and we get about 0.12 degrees C, 0.13 degrees C per decade over the last 30 some years. And that's the kind of thing you have to look at for global warming. You don't look at year-to-year variations because nature dominates year-to-year variations. The global warming signal should show up in the long term. And that warming signal that we're seeing, which is only like 0.12, 0.13 degrees C per decade, that's only about half of what the climate models predict should be happening. And that's really what we should be debating, is why are all of our energy policies being based on these climate models, which are warming twice as fast as nature is warming?
You're listening to Caffeinate Thoughts Radio, and on the line we have Dr. Roy Spencer. Dr. Spencer, as far as this debating, looking at what kind of energy policies, I guess, do you think we should pursue based on what we're actually seeing rather than what the models are predicting?
At this point, I don't think any energy policies make any sense. I think we should let the energy providers use free markets and the demand for energy to let them figure out alternative energy sources for the future. Because, fossil fuels are not going to last forever. And they know that. Everyone knows that. And so we need to find alternatives, and these energy companies would be just as happy to make money off of other forms of energy. So, they're working on ways of alternative ways of generating energy, and that's good. I think the fact that warming has been fairly slow, benign, maybe even beneficial. The extra CO2 in the atmosphere, nature loves it. That's something that isn't often mentioned, although I was pleasantly surprised to see a new NASA report in the last several days with many co-authors talking about how the Earth has greened in recent decades because of the extra CO2. This is something we've known has been going on, but it isn't much reported, so it was nice to see NASA actually be part of a study that admits that. CO2 is necessary for life on Earth. Life on Earth is relatively starved for CO2, and I think we're going to find that more CO2 in the atmosphere, along with a little bit of warming it causes, is on the whole a good thing for life on Earth.
Roy, you mentioned earlier the computer models, which are sort of the basis for all of our public policy, it seems. And it seems to me that from everything that I've read and heard, that the models are demonstrably false. And I mean, one thing that comes to mind is Al Gore's now famous prediction, I think back in 2008, that 5 years from that time, the polar ice caps were going to be gone. And I don't think he said it because he's an idiot. I think he really believed.
Well.
Easy now.
Okay.
I don't think he said it purely because he's an idiot. I think he said it because he believed the computer models. So if the computer models are demonstrably false, I don't understand how come someone out there doesn't seem to care about that. What are your thoughts?
Well, actually, that's an interesting point, and we've wondered the same thing. How can the climate modelers continue to defend their models when the observations are so clearly, opposed to the model, and not supporting the models? And the pushback that we get is the modelers claim, well, the observations might be wrong. So that's one of the angles that they take, is that the models are right and the observations are wrong. And once you go down that road in science, you can pretty much throw science out the window when you start believing theory but not the observations. And the other way that they look at it is, okay, well, maybe the models are temporarily wrong, but eventually they'll be proved correct. In other words, that the observations are suddenly going to start warming very fast and will catch up to the models in some future year.
Well, that's great work if you can get it.
Yeah.
to produce a model like that and justify it on that ground.
Yeah, I know. And the trouble is in this business, nobody can prove anybody else wrong. You can't. There's too much uncertainty. That's one thing that I try to get across to the public is, not all science is created equal. Some things are right. Really well known.
Dr. Spencer, we're out of time. Thank you so much.
Okay.
This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back in a moment.
Thanks for coming on, Roy.
You're welcome.
Hi, this is Brian Myers of Myers & Associates. If you're involved in maintenance at a manufacturing plant, you know how costly it can be when a machine goes down. And if the reason that machine went down is because the electronic controls on it failed, it can really be problematic if those electronics are obsolete. Well, not to worry. We represent Providence Industrial Electronics Repair, and they can get your machine up and running in no time. They repair boards, drives, servo motors, light curtains, you name it. So if you need industrial electronics repaired at your plant, or if you have other industrial maintenance needs, give me a call at 515-490-2640. That's Myers & Associates, 515-490-2640. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running.
Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Travis Riswold of Modern Woodmen of America. Call Travis at 515-883-0029, and he can help you find the life insurance
you need.
So, we have a very special guest in studio, somebody from I've known clear back from my youth ministry days, which I guess wasn't that long ago, but... some of our listeners don't know I was actually in youth ministry for 20 years, last 10 of those years with a group that actually unfortunately no longer exists called Serve Our Youth Network.
That was the early part of the 20th century, correct?
Well, yes, I started in 2002. So, and I worked there from 2002 to 2012, but this isn't about me. I want to talk to Jamie. Jamie Owen is the director of the Des Moines Urban Plunge, that's part of Christ in the City International. And you're also a youth director still, Aldersgate?
Yes.
United Methodist. So, and that's in Urbandale. So welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, Jamie.
Thanks for having me.
So what is Urban Plunge?
Urban Plunge is a mission trip opportunity in six different cities in the United States. And the one here in Des Moines started in 2009, and groups come from different parts of rural Iowa and the surrounding states. I've had a group come all the way from Ohio, but they generally come for just a weekend to have like an urban immersion experience in serving the least of these.
Great. That's from Ohio. That's crazy. Since there's like
three major urban centers right in their own state,
yeah,
and they come to Des Moines.
Yeah, but it's okay because when people come, we try to empower them to go back to their own city to look at the needs there and to see what they can do. Because a lot of the same kinds of people that you'll find in Des Moines and the same kinds of problems you'll find in a lot of cities, like homelessness and hunger. And
right. Now, I know when they first started up, I was still a Serve Our Youth Network. Part of the tour, I would actually give groups a tour of Polk County Youth Services because I had an office right in the juvenile detention center. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and yes, they'd let me out every day. I know it's scary, but I would give them a tour, and we'd talk about the needs of juvenile offenders. What types of things do you guys do now?
Yeah. So what's great about the Urban Plunge versus other mission trips you might go on is that you get a huge variety of mission places that you serve. So we typically see about 8 to 10 organizations in just a weekend's time. So we'll spend about 2 or 3 hours at each place. And we'll start out, like in Des Moines, we serve places like Children and Family Urban Movement, and we go and play with inner city kids in an after school program. And then that evening we'll go out with JAPA Outreach and we'll go to a homeless camp and mm-hmm. we'll have dinner with them and just kind of hear some stories there. The next day we might serve a food pantry or do a work project for the Des Moines Catholic Worker. We'll pass out vegetables in a poor neighborhood. And we're just starting to do this new service project I'm really excited about called Laundry Love, which is, it's a national effort, where laundry facilities are partnering, with people who want to provide coins and money for those that are, in poverty. So they may show up for, on a monthly basis or on a quarterly basis and say on this day, and they'll advertise it to the community, we're going to provide the soap and the coins. And if you want to bring your bedding and all the things that, are really expensive to clean, this is a day that you'll be blessed to do that. So we're going to be doing that this summer for the first time on the Urban Plunge. And I'm really excited. I've been collecting, laundry soap and encouraging the groups to bring the coins. So
great.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's cool. So how did you get started? I mean, you've been a youth director in several churches and, mm-hmm. and so what got you connected with Christen City International and Urban Plunge?
Yeah. So like I said, the Urban Plunge is in 6 different cities, and I signed up my youth group at the time to go on the Omaha Urban Plunge in 2007. And we just did a number of things that weekend, and we came back, and my kids were so excited to start doing missions locally. And they were like, well, we have, you know, people with these problems here. We should figure out what those organizations are. So instead of having youth group once a month, our youth group would start serving missionally in the community, and that would be our youth group night. And it was hard to find people who would partner with us on a Wednesday evening, but we did discover a lot of people. Even if we couldn't meet their clients, we could still do something for their clients during that time frame. And then, you know, they could take the meal that we prepare or something and serve it the next day. So I started doing that. And then in 2009, I ran into Michael Ross, mm-hmm. Who was the Urban Plunge overseer at the time. And I said, you should start a trip here in Des Moines because my kids have been serving the organizations here and it's not so far from Omaha. It might be a good location to start. And he goes, actually, we've really been thinking and praying about starting it. Would you get these missional partners around a table or help me, you know, figure out who those people are? So I was at the first meeting in 2009 to get the Des Moines Plunge established,
okay.
and but didn't start working for them until a couple of years ago. So
awesome. Awesome. So, what you mentioned, they're in 6 cities now. They were mm-hmm. only in 2 when last I really knew much about Urban Plunge. Where are they located? Other than Omaha and Des Moines?
Yeah. Omaha and Des Moines, Sioux City and in, Lincoln, Nebraska. And then the 2 newest ones are in Dallas, Texas and Las Vegas, Nevada. And we're establishing one right now in Hollywood, California.
You expanded out.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's probably a slight difference between Sioux City and Las Vegas.
Right.
So definitely some different experiences.
Right.
Yeah. And okay. So you've been a part of this and how long you've been working for them? 2 years now?
Uh-huh. Little over 2 years.
So what types of feedback have you heard from leaders and students as they experience this weekend?
Right. So definitely there's a huge ministry, youth ministry component to it, because 75% of the groups that come to us are youth. Although there is no late age limit, and small groups could do this at your church, a mission committee could do it. But a lot of the youth that come, it's just an opportunity for them to experience a wide variety of service opportunities where they can kind of figure out, what am I passionate about? You know, what is my heart beat for? Do I really care about these human trafficking victims? You know, does it break my heart to see homelessness? Does it break my heart to hear that a child couldn't go to school because they didn't have anything clean to wear? I know that things have developed from the kids who have come. There was a girl who started a food pantry in her high school because she knew that there were kids that came to school without having, you know, enough food at home. So I know that it really has made an impact in these little lives. And as they're growing up, you know, they're discovering what maybe God has wired them for.
Great. When I was with Serve Our Youth Network, I talked to churches about the overwhelming need. And, you know, I think about Acts 1:8, where Jesus says, you'll be my witnesses in Judea, in Jerusalem, Judea and Samaria and to the ends of the earth. And it's like, I think of the church, the local church does a good job with, you know, our Jerusalem, the people we know and we're familiar with, mm-hmm. and then to the ends of the earth. But Samaria always gets jumped over. These are the people that we're not, that are close in proximity, but there's a lot of differences and we're not entirely sure how we can best, you know, minister to them. Do you see when even with adults, you know, they come and our eyes being open, it's like, you know what, this isn't as difficult as maybe I thought it was going to be.
Right. I would say, you know, the one story that keeps popping up to me is the Good Samaritan. Mm-hmm. Because we think of 100 different reasons when we see someone, you know, flying a sign, saying, hey, I'm homeless and I need some money. We think of 100 reasons why we couldn't stop to see if there's anything we could do to help that person. We have our schedule. We have our church. Oh, our church is doing this for the homeless once a month. So I'm somehow helping that person in some way. But very rarely will we be like the Good Samaritan, and we'll stop what we're doing and we will find out, how can I help this person right in front of me? Mm-hmm. And, the Urban Plunge, kind of, that's our experience. We meet people face to face and we see if we can meet that person's need right in front of us. And it gives you courage to say, to do that again. It took me almost a year of going on Urban Plunges before I had the courage to do that, before I could even recognize who the poor were.
Yeah.
You know, I'd be driving over bridges all the time in Des Moines and not realize there's people living underneath mm-hmm. them.
Right.
These people sitting outside McDonald's on University and Sixth Avenue. Those are usually the homeless, and they're waiting for you to throw your food in the trash can so they can dig it back out and see if there's anything for them to eat. So just to go up and say, hey, you know, is there anything I can get for you while I'm in McDonald's today, or as I'm walking into Hy-Vee? You know, is there anything that you need? Having the courage to say that, and sometimes you're wrong, and they say, "I'm not homeless," or you know, they're offended. But at least you tried to help, and often people will take me up on that.
Tell us,
you're listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We've got Jamie Owen with Urban Plunge, Christ and City International, in studio with us. Go ahead, Brian.
Tell us a little bit about how each of the locations are funded. How do you guys do what you do?
Well, there is a fee to going on the Urban Plunge. You have to have a minimum of 10 people to take a trip, because you have a guide with you the whole time, taking you from place to place. So it's $130 per person, which actually is very reasonable for a mission trip if you've done any mission trip. Mm-hmm. If you're a youth director listening, you're like, oh my gosh.
What a bargain.
But as we basically, that money just covers your you know, your lodging and a couple of your meals. But a lot of the times we just eat the meals with the people at the organization they're eating their meals at. And you really get a kinesthetic experience. A lot of these organizations we work with are funded privately by donors, or they're funded by the government.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I was just thinking, you know, there's just a lot of needs out there a lot of people aren't aware of. I mean, you already mentioned, you know, some with the homeless folks. I remember taking a, a similar trip to Toronto, Canada, with a group of kids when I was a youth pastor in Indiana. And I remember people, there was this homeless man laying on the sidewalk and people were just walking by. Mm-hmm. And he looked like he was, I mean, he was beet red. It was actually, I know it was Canada, but it was in the 90s. It was really hot. And it's like, mm-hmm. we're thinking, is this guy even alive? You know, nobody's stopping to even check in on
sure.
him. Mm-hmm. But there, you know, needs like, for instance, the human trafficking you talk about. What are some things that, you know, your eyes lit up. You know this topic. How can we address that need?
Just a couple of minutes left.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, that's just something I'm learning a lot about right now.
Uh-huh.
We have our students because of the fact that they're only here for a weekend, there's not a lot we can do long term to help
right.
a human trafficking victim. But our students do take the time to write a letter to a human trafficking victim. And that's given to places like that are just starting up here in Des Moines that are serving that population. I think the Dorothy's House is.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I'm not aware. I just know that's a problem. We actually need to probably do a segment on that because mm-hmm. it's becoming a great, you know, well, I think it's been a problem for a while, but now it's just people.
It's coming to light.
It's coming to light, mm-hmm. Which is good. We need to address this. It's a blight in our community that we need to try to eradicate
right.
and deal with this at the church. So how, you know, your parent, you want to know how can I get my kids' youth group involved in this? I mean, where do they go to find out more?
Yeah. The website for the Urban Plunge is urbanplunge.com, and it'll list all the cities there, and you can just click on the link for Des Moines, and it'll tell you some of the mission partners that we work with that you would probably be working with if you came on a trip. And then the information to call the city coordinator to schedule your trip would be available or to answer any questions.
Great. And just how can we pray for you, and how can our listeners pray for your ministry? Just we got with 30 seconds.
Probably just, you know, more awareness and support, just spreading the word about the Urban Plunge so that, if you are a local youth group and you really don't know where to start missionally, that you would contact us and we could tell you where those places are here in Des Moines that you could be serving.
Yeah, but then there's really a lot of needs and there's a lot of organizations out there. I remember when I was working with Soy. And yeah, thank you so much for what you're doing and putting that spotlight on these great organizations. That was Jamie Owen. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio with Shane Vanner and Brian Myers. We'll be back in a moment.
Thank you, Jamie.
Thanks, Jamie.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a better or the best life insurance plan for you, call my friend Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
And Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Crosswalk Ministries with Scott Owen, who offers biblical counseling and conciliation. Give them a call at 515-292-7141 or go to crosswalkcounseling.org.
And now it's time for our news segment, otherwise known as News You Can Use. All right, first up, this is from CNN. The Donald sweeps the primaries in five states. Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton scored huge victories Tuesday that bring them closer to a monumental duel for the White House in the fall. Monumental.
Monumental.
Trump's political strength was on display with a clean sweep of races in Maryland, Delaware, Pennsylvania, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. Clinton delivered big wins in Maryland and Pennsylvania, which was the biggest prize of the night, along with Delaware and Connecticut. Bernie Sanders picked up his sole victory of the night in Rhode Island. But the wins for Trump, following a massive victory last week in New York, move him significantly closer to the 1,237 delegates he needs to win the nomination outright and avoid a contested Republican convention.
Here's the thing to note about the Pennsylvania primary. Only 17 of those delegates are bound. The rest he actually has to win at convention. And he's not been very good at doing that.
This is true.
So it's not as big of a... I mean, yes, it was a good night. It was not a good night for Ted Cruz. There's can't spin that. The only thing to remind people about is how many Republicans actually voted compared to other states. So people who are acting as though this is, oh, well, this is over, he's the presumptive nominee. No, he's still... Everybody, when they were doing the projections on how the delegate count was going to probably end up, knew that Donald Trump was going to have a good night. This was not surprising. It would have been surprising if he didn't have a good night.
On the other hand, there's really only one hope left for Cruz, and that's he has to have a really big night in Indiana.
Indiana and then California. I don't think he has to win California, but he does. Donald can't sweep the California delegates. Obviously Trump took a step closer.
Right.
There's no denying that. But this is not over.
It's not over, but it does look a bit grim. And the
media narrative's playing into that because, like, oh, he's presumptive nominee. No, he's not the presumptive nominee.
Well, this is a good segue into our next news item from CNN, because I think this is one of the reasons why it was done. Ted Cruz picks Carly Fiorina as his running mate. And I think, at least in part, the reason why we're seeing that when we did was an acknowledgement by the Cruz campaign that they needed to shake things up. You know, I think that's part of a response, you might say, to how things went with this five-state sweep.
I think just based on how close Fiorina has been to the Cruz campaign since she jumped in as a surrogate and endorsed him, there was a lot of speculation she was going to be his pick. I think the timing, obviously, yes. How do you counter bad news
exactly
with different news?
Yep.
So the timing, I think, probably doing it when they announcing it when they did had something to do with the Northeastern primary. But I think
it got him some much needed attention when everybody was talking about the Donald's big night.
Trump is masterful at doing this. Mm-hmm. So that was a good move on Cruz's part. But, people are saying, oh, it's a desperation move. No, I think this was something that they were planning because they are keeping in mind, and this is totally, usually you think of a running mate in terms of how they're going to help you with a general election. But this primary is not done yet, and Carly Fiorina has already been chosen by California Republicans in the 2010 Republican primary. So they know her, they trust her, they like her. So she could be a real help to him in the California primary.
After a great deal of consideration and prayer, I've come to the conclusion that if I am nominated to be president of the United States, that I will run on a ticket with my vice presidential nominee, Carly Fiorina, Cruz said during a rally in Indianapolis.
Yeah, but it'll be interesting because, there's going to be a battle for the vice presidential nominee, too.
Mm-hmm.
And It's better for Cruz to put that out there and get delegates thinking about that than trying to forward somebody's name, at convention.
Yep, I agree. And according to ABC News, Ted Cruz is apparently the devil. If you're John Boehner.
Lucifer in the flesh, yeah.
Former House Speaker John Boehner isn't buying Senator Ted Cruz's pitch to unite the Republican Party against Donald Trump in a talk at Stanford University on Wednesday. The plain spoken, oh boy, Ohio Republican called the Texas Senator, quote, Lucifer in the flesh, unquote, adding that he found Cruz difficult to work with in Congress. He said, I have Democrat friends and Republican friends. I get along with almost everyone. But I have never worked with a more miserable beep in my life.
Tell us how you really feel.
Don't mince words.
Cruz sparred with Boehner throughout his speakership over funding the government, most notably in 2013 when the government shut down for more than 2 weeks.
I think that's a wonderful endorsement that, that Speaker Boehner gave.
It really was. In a way.
Yeah, because, you know, this is just something that, I mean, the grassroots conservatives did not like him anyway.
The one thing I would say is that to the people who may not be Tea Partiers or grassroots conservatives, this is going to signal the truth of what many people have been saying about Cruz all along, is that he doesn't play nice in the sandbox. He can't get along with people. He can't build coalitions. It feeds into that narrative,
right.
Rightly or wrongly.
But here, yeah, I think it's wrongly, because Boehner's thing is, oh, he didn't step in line and do what I wanted him to do.
Next up, we've got a piece here from Hot Air. ESPN dumps Curt Schilling for his bathroom law comments. ESPN has fired baseball analyst Curt Schilling for posting a political meme critical of pro-transgender bathroom policy on his Facebook page.
His personal Facebook page.
Yes. The sports network owned by Disney issued a statement claiming Schilling's unacceptable conduct violated their policy of inclusiveness. ESPN is an inclusive company. Curt Schilling has been advised that his conduct was unacceptable and his employment with ESPN has been terminated.
Yeah.
The Huffington Post reports that Schilling added his own commentary to the meme before he deleted it. Quote, "A man is a man no matter what they call themselves. I don't care what they are, who they sleep with. Men's room was designed for, shall we say, male anatomy. Women's, not so much."
I think we'd say that word on the radio.
I think I'm just going to edit that.
Okay.
Anyway, he continues, "Now you need laws telling us differently? Pathetic." Unquote.
Well, I love it. ESPN is an inclusive company, except for if you don't disagree. If you disagree, then we're not so inclusive.
That's the way that works.
Yeah.
That is the way that works. If you're on the left, you've got this tent that is so large, you can't see the end of it. Until, of course, you don't buy what they're selling.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, there's no room in that tent for you. Okay, last up from the Washington Times. The White House blames the weak economy on, wait for it, congressional Republicans.
Of course.
Did you ever think it might be anything else? Oh.
No, it's always the GOP.
The White House labored Thursday to explain a weak first quarter economic report. The disappointing growth of 0.5% in gross domestic product was a result of, quote, weak foreign demand and low oil prices, unquote, said Jason Furman, Mr. Obama's top economic advisor. White House Press Secretary Josh Earnest blamed congressional Republicans in part for the weak growth, saying the economy would be stronger if Congress had agreed to Mr. Obama's proposals for higher spending on infrastructure projects 3 or 4 years ago. The reason that opportunity was missed was because of Republicans' stubborn refusal to consider any priority that President Obama has identified. And that's unfortunate.
I would like to just, sometime off the record, incredible, just talk to Josh Ernst and say, do you really believe anything you say?
I don't think. Well, I don't think he's nearly as good as that putz that preceded him. His name escapes me off the...
Oh, yeah. Well, shall be known as the putz.
Yeah, that guy was an awesome liar.
This is Caffeinate Thoughts Radio. We'll be back in a moment.
He told fibs for a living.
Yeah.
Your friend just had a huge fight with her husband. She is frustrated and can only think about how bad the conflict is and will become. How can you help? I'm Scott Owen with Crosswalk Ministries of Central Iowa, and it's time to pause for peace. Our first reaction to a friend like this is to listen. This works initially, but in the long run, we tend to only be encouraging negative thinking and gossip. You're not a marriage counselor, but what can you do? One thing you can do is help her adjust the direction of her thinking. Right now, she only sees the bad that conflict promises, but she might benefit from seeing three good things that conflict offers a Christian. I use the Peacemaker's Principle pamphlet by Peacemaker Ministries to show that conflict is an opportunity to do the following: glorify God, help you become more like Christ, and to test your unconditional love and service. If you'd like more materials on how to help a friend, stop by our counseling center in Ames or visit our website at crosswalkcounseling.org.
Hey, welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Have you checked out our website? Go to caffeinatedthoughts.com. You can catch all the daily updates. Make sure to subscribe to our daily emails. You don't want to miss a thing. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Be our friend, because Brian needs friends.
Was that the swim you were doing there, Brian?
I don't know what that was.
I try not to look at him when we're doing the bumper music.
Well, I figure if I really get into it, Shane might laugh.
There you go.
Yeah, we can't have that. Yeah. No laughing allowed. No, none. No fun.
And now we've come to my favorite part of the show. We're about to share a story that is truly unbelievable. Yet, you know it must be true because...
You can't make this stuff up.
All right, this is from MSN News. Jonathan Nicola, the star high school... I'm going to repeat. The star high school... What did I say, Ron?
High school.
The star high school basketball player in Canada who is under investigation for possibly lying about his age. He claims that the misunderstanding is due to him not knowing his real age. And his real age? He's 29.
Okay.
My goodness.
I can see if you were like 19, maybe I could buy that. But
Nicola was a star player for Catholic Central Secondary School in Windsor. But he was arrested at the Canadian border and has been held by immigration since April 15th. He was traveling to the U.S. with his team when border services were alerted that his fingerprints matched that of someone who tried to make a refugee claim in the U.S., the Toronto Star reports. According to information shared at a hearing, Nicola's visa application and a passport to Canada listed his birthday as November 25th, 1998. However, his documents for the U.S. listed his birthday as November 1, 1986.
A little bit of a discrepancy there.
Just a little bit.
Nicola said the issue is his mother never told him his birthday. I always keep asking, what is the specific age that I was born? And she has told me that she could not remember, Nicola said at a recent hearing. Over in South Sudan, not every year we study. We also keep moving to different schools, and over there they do not ask your age. They do not ask you nothing, Nicola said. He applied for a visa to the U.S. in Nairobi that was denied in April of 2015. He was applying to enter the U.S. on a full scholarship. 6 months later, he headed to Canada on a student visa to attend a school on a full scholarship. The question is, how did Nicola get his documents to play ball in Canada? He says he met somebody who helped him with his application. I'll bet he did. At 6'9", Nicola was a stellar player for his high school. You think? His coach thought the supposed 11th grader had a chance to go pro.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. I'm told I'm 59, but I don't feel 59. I should probably go back to high school.
There you go.
Maybe
nobody'd ever guess.
Nobody knows.
I'm sorry, you were not 21 Jump Street material.
Nobody would ever know.
Yeah.
No, look, all I gotta,
dye the hair, shave the beard.
There you go.
Okay.
Nobody would know. Right?
Oh man.
I mean, yeah. If a 6'9" dude who's 29 years old can pass for a junior in high school,
he must have had a
I can do it.
He must have had a real baby face.
Yeah.
I'm like, people just
look the other way and said, watch that guy jam that ball.
Yeah. There had to be. Wow. Well, I'm just like, what? Why would you want to go back to high school?
Well, look, there may actually be something to this. He just didn't know how old he was. Send your You Can't Make This Stuff Up ideas to story@caffeinatedthoughts.com, and we'll give you the credit or the blame if we use your suggestion on the show.
Welcome. It's been a long show. See you later, everybody.
Take care.